So in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, what I would like to do, as I'm guessing this will be the second to last week, at least for how I've plotted it out, is that we would take all of 11 along with the first part of chapter 12. And so the reason why I want to do that is because of one particular phrase. Yes, everything else is related to it. But before we get into chapter 11, I want you to see these words in chapter 12, verse 1. And I'll hopefully explain more after we read them. But could somebody just read chapter 12, verse 1?
Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them.
Yeah, so there is a day coming. And maybe you've been through this day already, where you don't look forward to tomorrow. When you hear the song from Annie, "The sun will come up tomorrow," you're like, "Oh, dang it, you're right," and you just eventually become that way. That's your new perspective on life. Is I would really rather the sun not come up tomorrow. If this could be it, that'd be fine by me. But what the call is to anticipate that there is this day coming. There is a certainty to the fact you will not enjoy the fact that you woke up. You'll be very upset about that. And if only I could just be with the Lord and be done with this, right? And that's this. Remember your Creator. And I know it says in the days of your youth, but I want to give this call that this is really the means by which any and all of us are going to persevere in whatever life throws our way, but especially as we anticipate this very real certainty that in the face of all uncertainty, I can't control the stock market, I can't control a natural disaster, finding my house or my business. There's an endless array of things that you cannot control. And all the uncertainty and then the only seeming certainty of life, once again, this kind of pessimistic view of life, the only thing certain about life is death. What we need to do, what Christians need to do, what the people of God need to do, is remember our Creator, how He made things. So with that in mind and firmly in hand, I want to talk about chapter 11. Chapter 11. I'm going to start us out reading verse 1 and 2. If somebody can pick up the pieces in verse 3 and 4, and then verse 5. Just verse 5. All right. Send your bread on the surface of the water, for after many days you may find it. Give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you don't know what disaster may happen on earth.
If the clouds be full of rain, then they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not weep.
Just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of a pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things.
Yeah, so just note that little ending phrase there. So you don't know the work of God who makes everything. So once again, this idea of remember your Creator, the one who is ruling and reigning over all things in the midst of all this seeming uncertainty. But as we're diving in here, this is such a strange phrase, to send your bread on the surface of the water. We have a little bit of a hurdle. This is a small hurdle, but a hurdle nonetheless. Anybody fed the ducks before and just seen what happens to the bread when you throw it out?
More come.
There's that.
It gets wet.
They eat it.
Oh. Well, sure. My daughter has had some unfortunate luck where she has thrown bread out and the bread just stays there. But it floats for about 15, 30 seconds. And then because, it's the bread that we have today. It's So I need us to not think of this as sliced bread or Wonder Bread or whatever, but more along the lines of this kind of Mediterranean, thick, hearty, almost meat-like bread. It's dense. There's a reason why they...
Don't do it at the beach.
Yeah.
Or the people will beat you up.
Yeah, well, it's meant to be more of a thing of a frisbee, you know? Like, you can chuck that bread, and it'll just soar.
Why don't they eat it back then?
Well, so notice the second part of the phrase. For after many days, you may find it. Mm-hmm. That's really odd. Verse 2 kind of explains more of what this could mean. But it says, if you're saying, when you have something to give, give it. And it might come back around. That sounds a lot like karma. I want to make sure that we're emphatically clear. It's not because you deserve it. It's talking about the uncertainty. And what do you do about the fact life is uncertain? So verse 2 brings up something very uncertain, a disaster. Give a portion to 7 or even to 8. Do I have any other different translations that alter that? Because I've heard a couple people comment on this verse specifically, saying that it has to do with your life investments or even your retirement fund and diversification. And like, you need to invest over here, a little bit over here. And I just don't, I'm not convinced by that way of thinking.
My commentary says that.
Yeah, and
it says, various scholars have suggested it could refer to maritime commerce. Diversifying one's financial assets,
yeah,
or giving to the poor.
So, the last part of that I like.
Mine just talks about generosity.
Yeah, I think the other is way too worldly. Knowing Solomon's wisdom, I think it says the same thing that Jesus said about taking your treasures to heaven. There's only one thing you can take to heaven is you and the other people that are.
Yeah,
and so it's store up your treasures in heaven and not on earth is what I get from it.
Yeah, no, I mean exactly. This idea of giving to 7 or 8 people is giving it. It's thinking about what you have currently and anticipating a disaster that might come. So today I have a surplus of money. I could buy more things for my house. So y'all remember the wildfires out in California that burned many celebrity homes even, or people who are rather well-to-do, but the insurance companies couldn't replace the homes. It just wasn't feasible, period. The homes were worth, I don't know, 10 times as much as what the original purchase price was just because the land had increased so much. Anyway, all that to say, if they would have purchased another thing for their house, another car, another set of wardrobe expenses or luxury entertainment, fill in the blank, it's another thing in that house that would have been destroyed in the fire. Does that make sense? And I think that's what it's kind of trying to set up here, is this idea that if you have an extra portion and you keep it for a rainy day, it'll be lost when the rain comes and sweeps it away. But if you gave it out to somebody else, that was a good, if forgive my use of the word, investment. Here, just hear what I mean when I say investment there. Sorry, you had something.
Not really, but there's a parable, you know, in the Gospels to this, what I see as the point.
Yeah.
It's saying that the guy that was had messed up and his master was, he's going to fire him. So he better hurry and make friends really fast.
Yes.
So he started excusing all the debts of all the king's debtors.
Taking partial payments along the way.
So that when it hit the fan, he's going to have some friends. And that's kind of how I read it. Is you better make alliances and allegiance by giving away things, because that's the only thing that's really going to last is their gratitude and maybe debt to you for having done something when you could,
yeah.
That when the time comes, they owe you a debt. Otherwise,
yeah.
This won't last.
Yeah, well, and the king didn't end up firing him, if you remember the rest of the parable, because of his shrewdness, that he was able to at least get something out of each one of these people rather quickly, some much-needed motivation. But yeah, no, I think either one of those is a good way to go about this, is that we're being wise with how we take this. But I do think the emphasis is on, in a world of uncertainty, when we don't know when disaster will strike, if you've got it in your pocket, give it over to someone who doesn't, and see how many people you can bless with this. Seven or even to eight, you know, thinking about this in biblical terms, seven's pretty good. And he just tries to up that one more, maybe even go all the way, who knows, to eight. Like when Peter tries to be spiritual to Jesus, you ever try to out-spiritualize Jesus, right? And he says, what do you think, Jesus? Should we forgive somebody seven times? That's a really good job, Peter. Wow, he forgave someone seven times. What about 70 times seven, right? Try harder, Peter. Come on. I think something similar is going on there. But then it moves on to the weather and some good things, right? Clouds are fool. And they will, so there's, we're trying to see some certainty here in the uncertainty, they will pour out rain. All right, I don't need to tell you, the weatherman is a weather guesser, he's, you know? Yeah, I don't know if you've ever looked at your phone or the TV, and they said, in about 3 hours, rain's going to start, and you look out the window, and it is raining, you're like, I think you were wrong. So there are signs, is what the Bible's acknowledging here. There are signs that, yes, something is about to happen, but you still don't know when. You don't get to say, there's your time. I think Jerry Seinfeld has the quote about the about when milk expires. And so the farmers are there with their stamp, and they burn it into the side of the cow and say, there's your date. That's when the milk's going to expire. Anyway. There's always an actual timestamp on the milk. I always find that hilarious. It's like, that's right, 4:59 on April 12th, it will expire. Anyway. and then a little more about what happens when you know something will happen and you don't know when is about trees falling. So on one side of this, you don't know which direction it'll fall. But what do you think the significance is of the tree lying there after it's fallen? And you can think about this in a house or, yeah, when you're on along the road driving.
It's going to happen. Nothing you can do about it.
Well, and when it happens, when it comes to you, I mean, what can you do about it, you know?
That's why I hate going down Rob Hill. I was waiting for a tree to fall. Because they fall on that road all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They call it Willow Hill. I need to go down, especially when it's raining.
You just can't stop. What were you going to say, Lesta?
I just said, hopefully you're out of the way.
Yeah, hopefully you're out of the way.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost trying to set it up here as this is now an obstacle in your life that you can't do anything about, that you have to get this tree, whether it's out of the road, or off of your property, like if it maybe fell onto your house, for goodness sake, like this is a massive problem, and you are powerless to do something with this. I don't know if you're familiar with this theologian's name, but would any of you know R.C. Sproul?
Sure,
I don't
know his name. Deceased.
Yeah, so he's deceased now. He has a lot of free resources. Wonderful writer, Presbyterian fella, but. Very helpful theologian, very impactful in the 20th century for sure. And I came to find out this past week that this is actually the verse that led him to saving faith in Christ.
Okay.
Because when he heard about this tree that fell, he saw himself and said, I'm the tree. I am unable to get myself upright and to out of the way of my own life. It's very interesting. It's not like that was the only verse he ever heard, but that was the final straw that God gave him to lead him to Christ and to see his need for Jesus.
This goes to show it's a Holy Spirit thing.
It's yeah.
Really not the words.
Yeah, absolutely. This is some spirit-powered work that only God can do. Anyway, food for thought. All right, well, we'll keep on moving here. It's almost like it's reflecting here on those clouds that were full. One who watches the wind will not sow, right? So you're the weatherman looking out at all the things that are going to come in your life, like weather, right? The one who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you don't know the path of the wind or how bones develop in the womb of a pregnant woman. Okay, I have to talk about this because the day and age in which we live, the Bible's obsolete, right? Because now we know how bones form in the womb of a woman. This is a part where you rebuttal me and say, Pastor Nate, yeah. I imagine someone's going to read that text and immediately say, with all of our advanced technology, I don't know why they talk this way, in embryonic studies, and we can see the moment that life begins and all this stuff and how the DNA multiplies, and we can explain all the microbial things that are happening. I don't know. I'm not a science person, but some sciencey person or someone who claims to be a science person is going to say, well, we know that. And because we know how babies grow in the womb, the rest of this passage just doesn't matter. Is that the point?
I don't think they actually know how they're formed, though.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
They know that its DNA is all involved in all that, but what makes it happen?
Yeah.
How does that cell split?
Yeah, and even if you are biologically so enthused and excited even by saying, well, you see, the mitochondria and all this, that, and the other, and motivates the cell to multiply and is the powerhouse of the cell, it just... That doesn't explain anything. Like, at the same time, you can look at, to take this imagery of seed, think of a literal seed, a plant, and when the leaf comes out of it, I understand, biologically, you can explain it. But you cannot look at that and explain what's going on. How in the world did that little thing become a tree? You know? You can't wrap your mind around it. You can see it happen, and every time you will be amazed by it.
I always told the grandkids, you know how you get those whirly birds or helicopters on maple trees?
Oh, yeah.
And how they fall seed down?
Mm-hmm.
I said, how's that happen? How does it know to do that?
It's like somebody said, you know, that anybody can count the seeds in an apple, but only God can count the apples in a seed.
I like that. That's a good turn. Yeah. Yeah. No, I do think even if we come to all reaches of science and understanding and scientific wherewithal is spread throughout the land, there's no one who doesn't know all the intricate detail. Like, at the end of the day, the point is you can't know everything. Even if you really are the expert of experts in this field, you don't know why it works. And every time a baby is born, you're still going to go, wow, what a miracle, you know? Y'all familiar with the book Matilda, right? Roald Dahl, and this little genius of a girl whose parents didn't want her and all that. That they turned it into a musical, and it was number one on Broadway for years and years. I think for at least 3 years straight, it was the number one on the Broadway. And then Netflix said, well, that means we should make money off of that. I mean, make a movie out of it. Well, the songwriter, the composer, is an ardent atheist, rather. His name's Tim Minchin, and he talks about the birth of his own kids. And he doesn't believe in miracles, but when he saw his kids being born, he couldn't say any other word. And so there is a great song. It's the very first song in the musical. If you want to turn it on for 2 minutes, you'll get the gist. And yeah, the parents who don't want a baby and didn't expect a baby, and now, oh, look, there's a baby. The dad wanted a boy and it's a girl, right? And the mom didn't want to be pregnant at all. But everyone in the hospital is singing around them, "It's a miracle." And the parents keep chiming in, "Horrible and miserable." And everyone just keeps on repeating, "It's a miracle. Every life that comes into this world is a miracle." I think that's how we're all going to respond no matter what, right? Well, yeah, we'll get her to talk about her own kids sometime and see if she changes her tune. Yeah. Her kids are misnomers. Yeah, you never know. Like, where do these things come from?
She says some awful things, but I just remember out of her mouth the other day.
Yeah, well, her kids were delivered by a stork, if I remember correctly. No.
I don't know who
they're
delivered by.
Well, no. Yeah.
All right, you don't need to say nothing.
Yeah, no.
It's
hard. No, y'all are doing great. Well, anyway, let me go on to talk about literal agricultural seed. So I'll read verse 6. If somebody else could read 8 and 9, or 7 and 8, let's go in twos. 7 and 8, and then somebody else finish out the chapter, 9 and 10. Here's verse 6. In the morning, sow your seed, and at evening, do not let your hand rest, because you don't know which will succeed, whether one or the other, or if both of them will be equally good.
Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in all of them. But let him remember that the days of his darkness will be many, and all that comes is vanity.
Rejoice, young man, in your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant in the days of your manhood. And walk in the ways of your heart and the desires of your eyes. But know that God will bring you into judgment for all these things. Therefore, remove sorrow and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body. For childhood and the prime of life are fleeting.
Yeah. This idea, first and foremost, about the agricultural part. So you don't know what's going to happen. So should that mean that you don't try? You know, there's something in here that's addressing the fears or anxieties that we each have because of the possibility of failure. Or if it doesn't matter how hard I work, why work at all? You know, if it's all just going to disappear, but it seems that the Bible's doubling down here and saying, all right, you don't know. Both things can work good. I just love how the Bible spins this, right? It's like, you're right, you can't know. So do two different things, and maybe both of them will work out for you. Work more diligently, not less. I heard a pastor say it, a lovely little turn of phrase. You will find, if you search for excuses, there will never be an end, right? The person who refuses who is scared of being rejected will not ask somebody out, let alone ask them to marry them. Or the person who knows that the job won't last forever will never apply for any job, you know? And certainly when it comes to when we share the gospel, we will remain silent, knowing that not every single time will we be accepted or even allowed to speak. But then it turns this into something very interesting, and it stays with this idea, and it'll actually continue into chapter 12. Light is sweet. That very first part of verse 7, is there a different translation besides light is sweet?
Pleasant.
Pleasant, okay. Okay. Yeah, 11 verse 7, light is sweet or pleasant, or it's pleasing for the eyes to see the sun. What is this talking about?
Well, I like to see the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People that are all depressed usually are in their darkened room.
Yeah. and refuse to come out. It's almost like having a vampire response to the curtains being drawn, you know. put up their hands, and they've been inside too long. It's like, no, let the light come in. Light is sweet. And if you want to go the science way about it, fine. There's the vitamin D aspect of it too. It's just, you need this. You need some sunlight. Did you know in July there'll be a Superman movie, and what's the source of Superman's strength? The sun, right? So get out there, touch some grass, let the sun shine on your skin.
I'm not just talking about this, giving you another day to see the sun.
No, absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. Because verse 8, if someone lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. So once again, this is not simply for the young. There is a rejoicing that is meant to be had so long as the sun does come up. So give Annie her due. You know, the sun will come up tomorrow, and that's a good thing. And let him remember the days of darkness, since they will be many. And this idea of remembering the days of darkness is not an anticipation of like, well, today's good, but tomorrow's going to stink. It's a motivation for you to look for the days that the sun shines, that things are going well, that you get to do something today that you don't get to do later. And so you make the most of it. This is much greater than the sentiment when I was in high school was you only live once, and so you live recklessly, right? This is more about every single day has the opportunity for you to look at it one way or another. This is going to be a day of darkness where I'm down and in the dumps because everything's coming to vanity. It's all smoke. It doesn't matter. Or it's going to be a day where I get to see the sun. You know, I get to see the sun in my life. I get to live this life that I'm doing. Do I like my work today? Maybe not, but it's what I get to do. Are my family very kind to me today? They're my family, regardless of how I feel about them today. There's a certain commitment that comes with that. Yeah, you look like you're thinking of something.
I think Solomon's, again, is reflecting on life. To me, he's trying to make wise sayings about life. There's pleasantness and there's gloom.
Yeah.
And we associate pleasantness with the sun.
Yeah.
Brightness and light, and the gloom with darkness and gloom and doom. I think that is. It's natural. You're going to get both in life. Sometimes. Almost at the same time.
You know?
I think it's using metaphors in a way of the light and the dark, don't you think? I mean, that's the way I read it.
No, absolutely, it is. And I'm trying to go with it, too, when I say, see the sun today. Yeah. Yeah. And it is a call here in verse 9. Let your heart be glad. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the desires of your eyes. And then with this does come a warning. So enjoy these things, chase after the things that are good. If you come to the point of overestimating what kind of joy you'll get from something. So if you say, I only want fun in life, or I only want entertainment or something like that, there's this warning at the end. But know that for all of this chasing after enjoyment, all these desires, ambition even, which I would say is a good thing under control, is this. Remember, you are going to go to God in judgment. So put away your sorrow, put away the pain from your life, because youth and the prime of life are fleeting. So don't waste it, right? Don't miss the opportunity you have to run as hard as you can, to sow the seed in the morning and in the afternoon too, on this field and on that field, to be generous, not reckless, you know. Dave, you have something? Okay. Let's move on to chapter 12. We're only going to cover the first 8 verses here because the last bit is just a little bit too dense for our time left. Verse 1 of chapter 12. So remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of adversity come and the years approach, when you will say, I have no delight in them, before the sun and the light are darkened, and the moon and the stars and the clouds return after the rain. So you already had rain, and now it seems to be coming again, or maybe there's rain with more rain. So it started out with a pour, and now there's thunder too. Verse 3, on the day when the guardians of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, the women who grind grain cease because they are few, and the ones who watch through the windows see dimly. The doors at the street are shut while the sound of the mill fades, when one rises at the sound of a bird and all the daughters of song grow faint. I need to stop there. You know what? I'm gonna press on. Verse 5. Also, they are afraid of heights and dangers on the road. The almond tree blossoms. The grasshopper loses its spring. The caper berry has no effect. For the mere mortal is headed to his eternal home. Mourners will walk around in the street before the silver cord is snapped. The gold bowl is broken. The jar is shattered at the spring. The wheel is broken into the well, and the dust returns to the earth as it once was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Absolute futility, says the teacher. Everything is futile. Useless, meaningless, smoke. Okay. I really need us to emphasize the remember part here. But what is it trying to depict here from verse 3 and on? It does not seem to be literal anymore. It's trying to use imagery to kind of waken your senses.
Growing old.
Yeah. I mean, it's not hard to think of the strong men who stoop, right? I was just driving home the other day, and there was a father and son who were on a nice jog, and then there was an older gentleman behind them, and I just noticed the posture with which they ran was different between each one of the generations. Like the dad was, and the son was just happy as a clam to just, yep, this is, I'm just keeping up with dad, no problem at all. And the old man was only walking and was very eager about it, but he was bent forward at 45 degrees, you know. It's very interesting just to see. But this is meant to be more figurative than literal. The strong man stoop, I do think that's literal. But the ones who watch, the last line of verse 3, the ones who watch through the window see dimly. What is that describing?
Your eyes.
Yeah, your eyes. The doors at the street are shut while the sound of the mill fades. Sorry, just one body part at a time, you know.
Yes. The doors and the lips.
Yeah.
And the grinding of the teeth is low.
Hmm. Yours says grinding of the teeth?
Mm-hmm. And one rises at the sound of a bird and the crowing of a rooster, and all the daughters of music, your voice and ears sing softly.
Yeah. Yeah, so losing your teeth is certainly a part of that.
Can't see, can't hear.
Yeah. And all of this is just part of getting older. And then I thought the fear of heights and just what's going to happen to me when I travel, you know, dangers on the road. I found that one to be remarkable. I have one very strong memory that I even reminded my dad of on Sunday when I was talking to him of a road trip we went along a dirt road mountain. And it was just a cartoon level of dirt road mountain. Room enough, less for a car. And so we're saddling the mountain as we're going around in a corner up and up and up. And my grandma's in the passenger seat and she yells, David, get away from the edge. And like there's no getting away from the edge.
Sure,
yeah. Well, anyway. Yeah, and it's like there's nothing we can do. We're at the we're on the edge. That's the only choice. Anyway.
We're not going down.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. At least we're well. Well, that was the worst part. Is we made it to the top of the mountain, and then you just went down the other way. Oh man, that was a terrible road trip. but
like pushing you down the road. That's even
worse. Well, it's interesting too because at that point in life, when all these things have happened to you, you would think you would lose the fear of death. It's in a real strange sense that actually your fear increases and your caution increases. Is that fair to say?
I don't know. We both have anxiety now on roads like that.
Sure. Yeah.
You made motorcycle trips on them. That's what's wrong.
I remember I did a camp pastor stuff, and it's always these country roads that lead to the camp that's in the middle of nowhere. Trees surrounding everything, and there are no streetlights, you know. So if there's no cars around, it's just high beams and pray, you know. I can see the road that I've never driven on just barely before I need to turn. but yeah, I just it's almost illogical to think this way, but we kind of have to acknowledge it that as you increase in age, there is this understanding that things are coming to a head. The end of verse 5, the mere mortal is headed to his eternal home, right? And yet, your caution is heightened. Your sense of danger is more alert than ever. Yeah, very, very interesting. And then verse 6 is just a list of ways to think about that final death. As you think about all these very important things and how they finally die. The silver cord snapped, the golden bowl is broken, the jar shattered at the spring, and the wheel is broken into the well. And then you have this word quoting from Genesis 3, and the dust returns to the earth as it once was. And what's not in Genesis 3, but in Genesis 1, the Spirit returns to God who gave it. Yeah. Yeah. In the certainty of death, and when these times come, because it's not only calling you to say, hey, accept the certainty you will die one day. Once again, this book is not trying to send you over the edge. It's trying to bring you to the edge and then say, okay, now step back. So how does this very small phrase in the beginning of chapter 12 make these final 8 verses here where the author or the preacher pulls no punches? It's just, you're losing everything. Eventually, the bowl is going to shatter, you know. Eventually, the string, the cord is going to snap. How is this idea of remembering your Creator meant to make this okay? Because it is. It's meant to be a comfort. But how do you think this passage in particular leads us to that? I think there's something to be said for that.
I think if you, maybe it says, if your mind is centered on God, that will carry you through these things, all the way from your youth to your final destiny, and the Spirit returns to God, that your focus on God will carry you through all of those.
Yeah.
God created us and we're going to return.
Yeah, and I think that's the inverse. The reason why it begins and ends with Genesis 1, right? In the beginnings, God created the heavens and the earth. And then the last part here is almost the inversion of Genesis 1. The Spirit returns to God who gave it. If you can recall, as God said, "Let there be light," you have the Spirit hovering over the waters of the deep, right? And it seems as the Spirit goes from place to place, it is the eternal Spirit of God lending its breath into the sun, the trees, the fish, the birds, the animals, us. Then God breathed his the breath of life into the dust, and it became man, you know. This is all under God's control. I even think it's kind of interesting how all this almost depicts like a village life. You have a house being depicted in verse 3, on the day when the guardians of the house tremble, right? You can't defend yourself. Each one of these things just seem to be a piece of a village. There's people grinding at grinding grain. There are windows in this house. There are it's a very long street. There's a sound of a mill. There's sounds of birds singing. It's this this place filled with life. There are almond trees. There are grasshoppers, and it's almost like you're saying that God is the one. When you get to verse 6, when the silver cord snaps, the gold bowl is broken, the jar is shattered at the spring. God's the one holding these things as they're used until the day that they're done. What's not here in Ecclesiastes is the fact when this body is done, there's a new one, right? Instead, what you have is an anticipation and hopefully a feeling that you've had during our study that it would be really great if this body did not give out, if I didn't have to think about whether or not the dentist can save this tooth, all right, or if that that organ can be replaced by a robot or something like that. You know, strange things we have to think about today. But to say that there is a creator who one day will make all things new. It's not here in the passage, but we have to kind of let our New Testament instincts take us there. I hope that makes sense. Even this idea that each one of us is a house looking out our windows, or as we're just a part of a bunch of houses along a street, that we think of the New Testament and how the New Testament depicts each and every believer as a temple, a house of God. These are good things to lean into. And all this to say, in verse 8, the preacher, teacher, one last time has to get his punchline in: absolute vanity. Meaningless. It's all going away. Just because it is smoke doesn't mean that it's meaningless. It means it's temporary and it is yours, so you can't hold on to it. But there is a very real way in which you get to be the smoke and get to say which way... which way you're accepting your life as smoke, or you can deny that reality and find all these twisted ways to live your life. But that's kind of what it comes down to. Do you know what I mean by that? When I say there's a way you get to either accept the reality of your life as smoke or live in denial. Does that make sense? Maybe even looking at the world around you. Do you think there are people who, or kinds of people, who deny that their very existence is temporary?
Mm-hmm. Movie stars, I think they're living forever.
Yeah. So, this struck me rather oddly. Tom Cruise, he's got a new Mission Impossible movie coming out, right? And he's been making these things since he was in his 20s and was a nobody, right? And now he's Tom Cruise, you know. And he said rather famously when his last Mission Impossible movie came out that he's going to be doing action movies until he's in his 80s. In promotion for this movie, he's since topped himself and says, now I think I'm going to be making these kinds of movies into my hundreds.
Well, he's following the wrong boat.
Yeah.
The Scientology probably telling him he'd be around to 100, but I think they want his money more than his brain.
You don't say.
Yeah, losing. Being important is more important.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's...
From all before him that they all die.
That's right. There's a reason why I can't name the movie stars of the 40s and 50s. Yeah.
I couldn't name them today. I watch it, but I usually don't know what the character's names are.
Yeah. It's like, I know who Frankenstein was. That's about it, you know? Like, yeah.
Making fun of me because I watched Dark Shadows. I started watching Dark Shadows. You probably remember Dark Shadows.
That's funny because I only know the Johnny Depp version.
Yeah. No.
Which came out 10 years ago.
when it started like in 66. Yeah. I remember watching it until high school. I said, it's only on, they don't have cursing in it and everything else. And so I'm watching it.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was like 50 million seasons.
Oh, yeah.
But it's so bad. Picture is bad.
Well, and and that show in particular is essentially a daytime soap drama, soap opera about vampires, so people who never die. So it's as if they were watching Days of Our Lives and said, what if we made it just go on for eternity? if this life and all the futility that comes with this brokenness in the earth is all that there is, we'll find ourselves as some kind of monstrous creature, making all kinds of weird justifications for our behaviors, and ultimately living in denial that we live as broken people in a broken world. I really appreciate the sentiment from C.S. Lewis. If I feel like I do not belong in this world, it must mean that I was meant for another, you know. So that's what we're looking forward to, is a day when the grasshopper will not lose its spring, where we no longer have to worry about this life shattering. There's a day coming when the world will be as it should be, and the sun will shine without ceasing, because the Lord will be the light. Yeah.
It's funny, my version says when the grasshopper drags himself home. That's true.
No, I've seen that. Yeah, as somebody who grew up fishing in Missouri, I know all about the grasshopper who drags himself along. It's called easy bait. All right. Anything else you'd like to pursue before we wrap up today? All right. Yeah, let me close this in prayer. God, we love you, and we do thank you. That you have told us how things end for us specifically. But more than that, you have given us light beyond the tunnel to say that there is a day coming of eternal day where there is no more gloom or temptation to it. There is no more despair or futility. There's no more smoke. Things become solid when you return, when you come back, when you come and make all things new. And we anticipate that day, and I pray that you will bless our efforts today to make this life matter on eternity, because that's what you've given us, the opportunity to change this world into the next one. And we know that will happen by the powerful name of Jesus Christ. It's in his name we pray. Amen.